You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Elizabeth Williamson writes for the New York Times, and I wanted to get some expertise here on this Alex Jones case. Many of you perhaps noticed the viral video last week from a courtroom that, Elizabeth, I thought that I was misinterpreting something, and thank you for joining us. The idea that all of that could play out in a courtroom and that Alex Jones's attorney could accidentally send over information to the other attorney that shows that Alex Jones perjured himself is a thing that I had never seen in any kind of trial, never mind a celebrity trial. So thank you for joining us. And tell me what happened there, first of all.
Sure. So what happened there was, they were sending over materials. So the lawyer for Alex Jones, a guy named Andino Reynal, representing him, for somehow someone in his office sent over an enormous document dump, like several hundred gigabytes worth of material, over to the lawyers for the Sandy Hook families in Texas. And nobody quite knows how this happened, but contained within that was the contents of Alex Jones' cell phone, the entire contents, including hundreds, maybe thousands of text messages that he, to that point, had been saying didn't exist, that he didn't have text messages, that he never spoke about Sandy Hook by text. And it was kind of funny to me because I had, you know, when I was writing my book, I had been contacting him a lot about Sandy Hook and often by text message. And when he was saying in discovery for these trials that he didn't have any text messages that said Sandy Hook in them, I thought, oh no.
What level of incompetence is that? Have you seen something like that before?
I don't think many folks had. I mean, there were a couple of lawyers that I was sort of corresponding with during the trial who were helping, you know, make sense of Texas law, et cetera, and they were absolutely stunned.
Take us through the history with this trial, because you have a level of expertise that is uncommon. What are the parts of this story that you believe are most interesting, historic, stimulating?
So, you know, the thing is with these cases, first of all, he lost, the reason that we have this trial in the first place is that there were a series of lawsuits filed by the families of 10 Sandy Hook victims. So four different lawsuits altogether. Late last year, Jones was defaulted in all of them. So they were defamation cases. So he was found liable for defamation in all four of them, because for nearly 4 years, he'd been stonewalling in the run-up to trial. He was refusing to submit to testimony. He wasn't sending staffers in who had been, you know, called to testify. He was defying court orders to produce financial records and business documents. And so finally, at the end of last year, judges in two states, Texas and Connecticut, had had enough of this. And so they ruled him, you know, liable by default. So these trials, there are three of them. Last week's trial was the first. And this is in these trials, the juries are instructed solely to decide how much he has to pay the families in damages. So that's all they have to decide. He would like to make this a trial about free speech, but that ship has sailed. He lost his opportunity to talk about that in court. And this is just about how much he has to fork over to these families for defaming them for years after the 2012 shooting.
What's going to happen to Alex Jones?
You know, that's hard to say. He's now declared bankruptcy again, so he's trying to protect his assets that way. He's trying to delay the remaining two trials. You know, in Texas, they have some pretty strict caps on what plaintiffs can collect in damages. So even though, you know, we had a verdict of nearly $50 million, probably all but about $5 million of that, those families will not see because of Texas law that caps punitive damages. But the biggest case of these three trials is brought by the families of eight victims in Connecticut, where punitive damages aren't capped in that way. So that would be a really big hit to him, which is why he's declared bankruptcy to try and protect his assets. This will probably wind on for years. But in the meantime, there's a moral point, of course, being made about the spread of disinformation and false narratives that really harm vulnerable people like this. But the broader point is, of course, that Alex Jones has had his fingerprints on all the big disinformation campaigns of the past decade since the Sandy Hook shooting. You know, he's called most mass shootings false flags. He's spread coronavirus myths. He had a role in Charlottesville, the Great Replacement Theory, Pizzagate, and of course, Stop the Steal and the attack on the Capitol on January 6, 2021. So bringing him down would be striking at least a symbolic blow against online disinformation.
What have you learned in the coverage of all of this over the years about disinformation, about the power that this man accrued?
You know, just looking at the damage done to the Sandy Hook families by the lies that he has spread about the shooting and about them personally, I mean, it was a really dark turn to name individual family members on his show because he's got tens of millions of listeners. And so if even a tiny percentage of these people believes this and decides to take action, he was saying that these families were complicit in a government plot to confiscate Americans' firearms. And so his listeners were like, wow, these people sound like they did it for the money, or, you know, they were party with the government in trying to take our guns. And so people were, you know, stalking them online. They were abusing them. They were showing up at their houses, looking in their windows, digging through their trash and confronting them on the street and threatening their lives. And this went on for years. So, you know, if anything, I got a really clear window onto the human impact of, you know, what we've seen, this sort of rise of disinformation in the culture and online.
How long have you been covering Alex Jones?
So I started covering this in mid-2018 when the families filed their lawsuits in, like I said, in Texas and Connecticut. Soon after, I decided that I wanted to write a book about this because I thought this would be a signal test of free speech. And, you know, does the First Amendment protect somebody who spreads these kinds of damaging falsehoods? But then it sort of grew into a broader story about disinformation because I talked with Lenny Posner, who is the father of Noah Posner, the youngest Sandy Hook victim. He has a tech background. He knows how social media algorithms spread this material. And he was basically saying, look, this is a foundational story in how misinformation and false narratives have spread. And he was really right. You know, the book that I wrote really had a lot to do with, you know, what he convinced me of and what I could see sort of play out over the intervening years, sort of culminating with January 6th and the attack on the Capitol.
The reason I asked the question on how long you've been covering this is because I would like for you, with that level of expertise that goes into authoring and vetting a book on this kind of subject matter, to explain to me how he got tens of millions of followers, the psychology of it. How did that work?
Yeah, that was really interesting. So he was in the aftermath of Sandy Hook, he kind of started to break more into the mainstream in that he was a vociferous, you know, defender of the Second Amendment. So he went on CNN, you know, Piers Morgan had him on. He was on Howard Stern. He kind of crossed over into sort of mainstream media interviews. But it was really his connection with former President Trump that put him into, you know, from the dragged him from the fringes into kind of the center of Republican Party politics. And so in the years from Sandy Hook in 2012 to 2015, when he had Trump on InfoWars at the end of 2015, his audience more than doubled and people became much more ideologically driven. And that was when, you know, you started to see some real activity, you know, around not only around Sandy Hook, but, you know, kind of against the so-called targets of a lot of his conspiracy theories.
Could you have seen in 2018 even something that would be at the center of what happened January 6th? Would it have been possible to you, even as things accelerated in 2016, to imagine that as some sort of mastermind leader?
No. Because when I first started writing about the book, or, you know, writing the book, I really felt like this is a very interesting phenomenon. We could see, you know, disinformation proliferating online. You know, you had the whole Russian interference in the campaign in 2016. So there was a lot to talk about, but I never really thought that it would move from, you know, targeting vulnerable individuals to really kind of chipping away at the foundation of our democracy, because you had a conspiracy-minded president who was willing to, you know, appeal to these people who have always been out there, but they'd always been sort of shunned by most of society, including our political candidates. But, you know, what happened with Alex Jones was he tapped into a constituency that Trump then used to help put him over the top in a really crowded Republican primary field. He was willing to speak to those people's paranoia and fears at, you know, with sort of nativist language. And, you know, he fueled their kind of paranoia and made it feel like, you know, this was a guy who speaks for us and speaks to us. And that was important.
Have you seen the fear on Alex Jones?
You mean from last week? I definitely saw it last week. That was unbelievable in the courtroom. It was really an accident of scheduling that Scarlett Lewis, who is one of the two plaintiffs, the mother of Jesse Lewis, who's the 6-year-old who was killed at Sandy Hook, that she was coming in to testify. Well, no, she was in to testify in the morning. Then there was a lunch break. And because she hadn't finished, she was going to testify some more in the afternoon. What he was banking on was that he'd blow off the trial until after lunch. He would turn up in time for his testimony, and he would never have to sort of face off with the parents. He was a no-show for a big chunk of this trial. And when he showed up and she hadn't finished testifying, for the remaining 90 minutes of her testimony, she directed all her comments directly at him. You know, it was like, Alex, I want you to pay attention to me. He was squirming. He was trying not to look at her. He was sweating. He was fidgeting in his seat. And she just kept fixing him in her gaze. And she would not let him look away. And she was just like, why? You know, why did you do this? I don't understand. You know, this isn't true. Is this for money? And of course, that is the answer. So it was, I have never seen him like that. But I have to say, as bad as that was for him, the revelation of those text messages that he didn't know anyone had, that was even worse. He was literally sweating through his shirt.
Well, that scene, beyond flabbergasting, people who might not have been paying attention to that trial, who just like courtroom drama, you might not even know who Alex Jones is or care about anything. That scene somehow arrives in a place that spreads to cause him a shame that was unfathomable, and his attorney as well. Like, I don't know how the two of them didn't just sink into the earth, because now you're perjuring yourself on top of everything else in a way that's easily proven.
Yeah, and just the day before. So, I mean, there was another moment where the lawyers for the family produced clips of his show from the day before where he was maligning the judge and the jury. He was calling the jury stupid. He was saying they were extremely blue-collar people who'd been handpicked by his political enemies because they needed people who were too dumb to assess the charges against him. It was just unbelievable. And to play that in the courtroom while he sat there was, that was just incredible. And for him, you know, he's used to sort of dominating the space where he is, right? You know, his show, he's on blast and no one else gets a word in edgewise. And so to have him sit there and be sort of confronted with facts, this is a guy who's not accustomed to facts, and being in a courtroom like that, it was something unreal.
The psychology of Alex Jones, is it as simple as money? Is it as simple as money?
I think that probably oversimplifies it a bit. You know, he is a conspiracy-minded person. He started out, you know, in Austin in the late 90s. He was sort of a feature of the funky culture in Austin. He was part of, you know, what makes Austin, you know, kind of welcome its weirdos. And he was more innocuous then, you know. I mean, saying the moon landing was faked or something like that is a far cry from what he was doing in the case of Sandy Hook. But he did get darker and darker. And he has always had ties to sort of like, you know, Western extremists. Stuart Rhodes is an old friend of his, the founder of the Oath Keepers, who was, you know, so heavily involved in January 6th. He went out to Waco and he rebuilt the Branch Davidian Church after the FBI siege there. So he's always kind of tapped into that stream of extremism, but he was never, you know, as malevolent a force as he was, as he began to be, especially with Sandy Hook, where you're naming grieving parents and saying they're liars.
Elizabeth, thank you for being on with us. Thank you for all the work you've done on this story.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Libertard.
Do me a favor, Chris. Look up Gerald McCoy's IMDb and let's see how many stats Stugatz gets right about what Gerald McCoy is.
IMDb, yeah. He was in movies?
Look, all right, I'm going to check it out.
Check out Gerald McCoy's IMDb. His Pro Football Focus grade.
Stugatz.
Okay, so I'm on Gerald McCoy's IMDb. Yeah. There was an acting credit which he played Gerald McCoy in The League, which was a popular show on FX. Then he played himself on the Dan Patrick show. Show in episode 12.4, 2018, and also something called The Game Day Commute, he played himself. Archive footage, he was featured once on Rome is Burning.
I mean, look at that.
This is the Don Libertard Show with the Stugatz.
We're presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code Dan for a special offer when you sign up. That's code Dan, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Jalen Rose is trying to take away our ability to say that things are the Mount Rushmore of something. He's saying that those presidents and those faces on that mountain shouldn't be allowed to be the symbols for greatness. And while he's not wrong, he's so wrong. You will not take this away from me, Jalen Rose.
What mountain would we use?
Very hard to do after that. If we move off of Mount Rushmore for
Mount Olympus,
I need four though. You know how we argue about these things. We just chased down Mike James in Europe because he said Steph Curry's not top five. We can only do this in fours or fives. The mountain can't have one face on it. It's got to have four faces on it. And how many other mountains are there with four faces?
The Mount Rushmore is not the designation we need to be worried about, though. There has been a proliferation of the use of the word goat, and it has simply gone too far. the number of times that you see a highlight of somebody on social media, goated, goat this, goat that. They can't all be goats. They can't, like, the phrase is greatest of all time.
Right.
Not everything that you see. I see the word goat on a daily. I should see the word goat once a year, once a month.
Right.
If we're being liberal with the worst, with
it should
the
be
use
special.
Of goat.
It should be special.
Absolutely.
It should be Michael Jordan.
Diana Taurasi, Lewis Hamilton,
Brady,
goats.
Too many though. How many?
Maybe one of each sport.
Yeah. Right.
That makes for too many goats.
Well,
I saw Sue Bird goat stuff over the weekend.
Yeah, she's in the goat conversation.
Totally
fair shout.
Goats. It's goat. Yeah.
She's in the goat conversation.
Still too many goats.
I think
people
would choose Taurasi over Sue Bird still, but it is definitely Sue Bird's.
But he's not just doing it with sports. He's doing it all over the place. It's a proliferation. It's been a goat outbreak. It's not good. It's too many. It's prisoner of the moment
What's
stuff.
What's wrong with a lot of goats?
Do you have goats outside of sports? Like, what do we use outside of sports?
Oh, yeah. Goat? Anytime I see, like, a live performance that Lizzo does, a goat. Greatest, it's like, Lizzo, I'm sorry. Lizzo's fantastic. She can't be the goat. She can't
Lizzo,
be the goat.
It's
too much. We've gone too far with Lizzo.
I'm winning him on this. We've gone too far. It needs to be.
I feel like Lizzo's in the goat conversation, though, Whitty.
Goat of what?
Who's Lizzo?
Of performers of the last 5 years, perhaps. But of all time, we're saying that of all musicians in the history of musicians, that Lizzo is one of the greatest of all time.
Hold on, because if we're saying there's different goats for each sport, then there's different goats for each musical category. So I think she'd be the goat.
But he's saying there are too many goats.
Category. What's her musical category?
Do you not listen to Lizzo?
I do listen to Lizzo, but I would classify it in a category that I would put other goats ahead of her.
I didn't say she was the goat. I said she's in the goat.
You think she's in the goat conversation? What has she had? Three album cycles?
At the moment, I feel like she's extremely popular and she's
had hits.
She's a trendsetter and pioneer.
She's no Anita Baker.
There you go.
The problem is that Jessica.
Someone I've heard of.
The problem is that Jessica is okay. She's got a more liberal. She's willing to give more goats out because you can't.
I love goats.
But you can't be Lizzo and Beyonce. You got to choose.
I think Beyonce's unequivocally.
But this is why you're diluting it by giving it to everybody.
I'm just saying she's in the goat conversation.
Is Janet Jackson in the goat conversation?
What does that do to Lizzo's place? She is the goat also.
But who is the goat?
And how big is the goat conversation? How many people we let into the conversation?
Having a lot of goats?
Is Whitney in that conversation?
Because it stands for greatest of all time.
Yeah.
Not one of the greatest
of all time. Still goat.
It's first ballot Hall of Famer. You can't be. We need to have first ballot Hall of Fame goat. And then other goats.
I think even first ballot Hall of Famer is an overused expression. Yeah. We say that all the time. Not everyone deserves to get in on the first ballot.
But this is actually escalated. You know what? I take back. I rescind what I just said. First ballot Hall of Famer is well beneath GOAT.
GOAT's the greatest, Dan.
That is correct.
Right.
There can't be too many GOATs. If it's the greatest,
there's many first ballot Hall of Famers.
You're only allowed one per category.
So in basketball, we know who it is, right?
LeBron.
Stop it. Football, we know who it is.
Yep. But I guarantee if Aaron Rodgers throws one 70-yard pass this fall, there's going to be a flurry of goat tweets in my timeline.
But then Randy Moss can't be a goat, right?
He's not
Jerry,
the goat.
Jerry Rice
oh, different
can't.
Position, though, Dan.
Jerry
hold on.
He's
yeah,
the goat of wide receiver. Right, Jerry Rice.
Yeah.
But there's,
positions.
But there's no conversation to be had. It's Jerry Rice.
Yeah.
Move on.
Yeah.
Okay,
we could also have a goat of the 2000s, goat of the 2020s.
The last two words are all time.
You guys are perpetuating this goat culture.
Greatest.
Too many goats.
Goad with a D at the end. Greatest of all decades.
We have to narrow this down.
We know hockey. I mean.
And this is why Jalen Rose can't take away the four from me. It's hard enough to make it one. It's hard enough. I need more room.
Well, he's saying you can't use the term out. You can't use the mountain. That's what he's saying.
As a symbol for excellence.
Well, now we have the Mount Gregmore, too, right? Isn't that five?
Yeah. Mount Gregmore is five.
We don't have.
There's a lane for Mount Gregmore now.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah,
Gregmore.
Yeah. He's so excited.
So,
think he knows?
would Jalen Rose put forward four new presidents that we should create a new Mount Rushmore with, or is he just objecting to the ones that currently are there?
I feel like none of them are very good.
Wow, we can't get to four presidents?
Maybe like two
Could
or
we?
Three.
Could we? Could we
but then
right
there's
now?
The issue of Mount Rushmore being on like indigenous land, and it's just like a whole trash thing another to begin with.
Another point for Mount Gregmore.
Yeah. It's safe. Yeah.
Where is Mount Gregmore?
It's wherever you want it to be.
Mm-hmm. I want
in his garage.
I want you guys to explore with me a story that I've been waiting to make an appearance, and finally, Mike, it is here. For some reason, over the last few weeks, reasons that are not explainable to me or anyone else, Jack Palance, the late Jack Palance, has sort of been haunting this show, and for years now, Mike Ryan has delighted in telling people arbitrarily, very little link to anything, hey, did you know that Jack Palance played Castro one time in a movie?
Goat.
Castro?
Palance.
Okay.
Careful. Ill-timed.
Yeah. Thanks for clarifying.
Yeah. There are some times that you don't...
out of your mouth. Why don't you just listen to the show instead of...
Palace is a goat.
Instead
man.
Of lining up...
Can I show you what the workflow was?
Your line. We need to go back for a second and show
let
everybody...
Let Mike show you.
Let us show you what ended up with Stugatz on a wildly popular show in Miami... deciding that his timing would be perfect on calling Castro the goat as Mike tried to wave him off it because he knew where we were headed and his timing was slow from Hall of Fame weekend. Stugatz, you have just told the people of Miami that you think Fidel Castro is the goat. Would you like to clean that up any?
I would. Jack Palance is the goat of actors for me. That's supporting actors, really. Specialty roles, if you know what I'm saying.
So thank you.
Thank you for clarifying.
For correct categories.
Thank you for allowing me to.
Yeah. Goat is specialty roles.
Lots of categories in the goat conversation.
Sam Elliott also in that conversation. I mean, yes.
Jack Palance has been haunting the show here for a few weeks. And now we have our story to link up with the Scarface story that we love to tell, which is that none of the people in Scarface were Latino. It was all Al Israel and F. Murray Abraham and
it was all Jewish people.
And Logia. It's not. And so now John Leguizamo. It's not Frank Lopez.
I gave you Elvira.
His name was not Frank Lopez. It was Logia. And Scarface was just riddled. Al Pacino's offensive accent is the eternal role for Pacino. Wildly offensive. but we're good with it. Like, we're allowing it. Scarface was great. We're not going to chase you down. But Leguizamo, who's saying...
Leguizamo.
Leguizamo.
Some would say.
Fine.
I've got a funny Leguizamo story. He's doing some sort of cooking show in Miami, and his people reached out because... they're cooking. You reach out to me. And I was going to go over there and they're like, it'll take 5 or 6 hours. And I'm like, sure, no problem. He should come by the studio for an hour. And they said, well, he's very busy.
Oh, yeah. Funny how that works.
And so I'm like, okay, you could go ahead and I won't be on your cooking show. Like,
5 to 6 hours.
You need 5 or 6 of my hours, but 50 minutes of yours is too hard. But Leguizamo's mad because the role of Castro has now gone to James Franco. And Leguizamo wanted that role.
Yeah. Well, also, James Franco was kind of canceled, so it was surprising to see him get a role of any sort, let alone one that...
That's not the part that Leguizamo is objecting to. He's objecting to, he's not Latin!
Yeah, there is that with James Franco. However, he does look like Fidel Castro. This taps into like the Scarlett Johansson debate. Like, we understand that you should look for, like, if you have a role that calls for someone in a wheelchair, why go after the top of the line marquee actors that aren't wheelchair bound? Why don't you actually audition some wheelchair actors and give them a chance because they can play these roles? But there's also the question, but that's not... like, this is part of the art of acting, me being able to portray this convincingly in some of the greatest acting roles of all time. Some of the roles that have been showered with prizes and critical acclaim was somebody going well beyond their means to portray this. So at what point does it stop being acting? is...
Well, I think the argument is because those people have historically never been given roles in Hollywood. So the preference would be to have casting be inclusive of people who are
I'm not coming out against inclusive acting. I'm also like just saying that there are people out there that tell like, okay, but this is also me giving a performance. This is me tapping into some form of acting. It's not necessarily insulting to some folks. I say if a white person wants Fidel Castro, they can have it.
Yeah.
I'm good with it.
Yeah.
I'm good. It doesn't have to go to a... If it doesn't have to go to a Cuban.
It's Luis Guzman, it's Leguizamo, and it's George Lopez. We are underrepresented in Hollywood. That's how Scarface happened.
Yeah.
There is another guy.
Who's the other guy?
He always
plays that one guy. You know what I mean?
It's getting better now. People have figured out that it's not just Luis Guzman, Leguizamo.
Wasn't Mark Margolis in Scarface? The guy from Breaking Bad?
Yeah.
Yes, he was.
Are you talking about Danny Trejo?
Yes, but no.
It's a bit of a typecast.
Are you bothered by the James Franco casting of Fidel Castro?
Well, if I'm not bothered by Scarface, do you think that these things are going to bother me? Because Scarface was pretty egregious here, and in the portrayal of Latin people, and I was like, okay, yeah. Pacino wants to do it. All right.
I mean, do we have to hire the best person? This is so weird. Like arguing for
it should
like,
be the best person.
Who should? Yeah, but who's most like Castro is just like a weird thing for me to ask myself.
I really wish this was with a different historical figure. I don't think that we spent nearly enough time on the mechanics of a hungover Stu Gatz. Not even realizing he had just called Fidel Castro the GOAT. Like, just, I don't think we can spend enough time there. When you ask, can someone act the role as well as someone who is in the role? That could not have been acted better. Where he got in with a flurry because he wanted to say
the GOAT
so bad, he wanted to identify someone as the GOAT. And really, in this market, in the city that we're presently sitting in the middle of, I don't know that you could have chosen a worse time to say that in the history of this show.
It's what I do.
How is that possible? He didn't even hear the Fidel Castro. The GOAT got from wherever it was in the brain lobe. It was there and then didn't process. Retain that Fidel Castro was coming out of my mouth next. Or didn't absorb that Mike Ryan was waving him off.
I wish I had been looking at Mike. I mean...
If someone ran into the street waving you off the way Mike Ryan was, you would immediately hit the brakes on your car and look all around thinking that there was an incoming missile or something that was about to land that you were to avoid. How did you blow the stop sign of Mike Ryan trying to get you to stop because he knew the story I was talking about?
All Fame Weekend.
How could you not hear the Fidel Castro part? Yeah. Like, you hadn't. The workflow was you had a good killer line that you should have just delivered on your own, but you ran it by me, which was fine. Right. And then as soon as like the time started stretching out a little bit and Bane invoked Fidel Castro,
that was
a really wrong time.
No damage was taken there.
The thing that I'm asking you though is not, was it a really wrong time? Was it the single worst time in all of our time at microphones for him to declare someone the greatest? Is what else? I mean, I could have said Hitler, but I'm talking about in our market. In our market, if I say Fidel Castro, the thing that you cannot say afterward is he was the greatest.
Yeah. I said it. I mean, we cleaned it up, though,
Your timing has to be slightly better than that, although it's perfect the way that it played out because I don't believe that you arrive at comedy like that scripted.
So, welcome.
So James Franco's a pariah now, hasn't been getting the roles that he has. He's like direct to VOD stuff, and he's kind of gone into hiding. And the filmmaker said that he had to actually find James Franco and convince him to do this. If you're James Franco, you're like, yeah, this is the role. This is the role for me.
This is
to start the comeback. The comeback starts with Castro. I was born to play this role.
I know I'll get him to like me more. And then, given what he's accused of, I do love Leguizamo coming in and being like, he's not Latin. That's not the most problematic part of this.
Yeah. We'll just keep pulling back layers, though. And someone just goes to Leguizamo, you're Puerto Rican. You should go to a Cuban.
It's true, though. Is Leguizamo qualified for this job?
Yeah, what? Wait, for telling James Franco he can't be Castro or for playing Fidel Castro?
Well, Franco was Spanish. Franco.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I'm confused.
This
now.
Is very confusing. And dangerous.
Don Levitard.
I think I'd like to know when I'm going to die, because I sort of romanticize the idea of like living like you were dying. Yeah. When you're on a countdown clock, imagine all the life experiences. Like I could go skydiving or Rocky Mountain climbing.
Stugats.
Roy brings up a point, though. Like, Roy does bring up a point. Like you might be risking paralysis. And that's
totally
a pretty
trample my bit. Yes. Just totally trample my
but
bit.
But Mike, what if, God forbid, it says you're going to die in like a week? Guy. What you're if welcome. It says a week, though? Like, or 2 days or a month? I don't want to know that.
Well, then you just love deeper and speak sweeter and give forgiveness to those that you've been denying. Yeah. Someday I hope you get the chance to live like you were dying.
Do you have more or is that it?
No, thank you guys for letting me go through that smoothly.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugats. Hey, people, tell us what in the sport made you laugh hardest this weekend. It is a segment we call What Made You Laugh This Weekend. Ha, ha, ha!
Funniest thing from the sports weekend is brought to you by our friends at CBDMD. It's kind of a funny weekend in sports. Tony, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
Guys, we had UFC 2 Vegas 59 over the weekend. 10 fights, 10 finishes. It was a great card. Jamal Hill beats Thiago Santos in the main event. And all while that's happening, referee Herb Dean is doing cameos in the crowd while people are getting choked out. It's just very Stugats movie. He's got his phone. He's like, hey, happy birthday, Bill. And he kind of like swivels around and stuff. Good stuff.
Suffered an L on that card.
Which one?
The Luque? The Luque fight?
Hands of steel, baby.
Dude.
Jeff Neal.
I can't believe he got knocked out. That knockout may actually make me have to start doing cameos.
Really?
Just in time for
it
fantasy
cost you
football.
That much?
Just in time for fantasy football season.
Well, how's your super follower thing going?
The super follower thing is fine if I could find out how to get my goddamn money out.
It's one of those?
It's just like, yeah, it's a little confusing. I've done everything, but I'll get to
it. Don't you enter your bank information, don't you?
Yeah, you do, yeah.
Right.
Let me just say this. Facebook pays quickly.
Have you tried to get a payment from Twitter
yet? Yeah, I'm looking at it. I have everything filled out. So
because Cameo's
maybe
easy.
Maybe there's like a 90-day waiting period.
Cameo, you hit like pay me and it pays you in 24 hours. That's it. Right to your account.
So they pay you quicker than you actually turn these things around?
Yes.
That's unjust.
It's weird, right?
Yeah.
Witty, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
There is an Italian decathlete who finished last because his penis kept popping out of his shorts.
What?
Must have been 2-inch inseams. Just kept popping out. He's trying to continue on, but finished a distant last. Because this was not a single time occurrence.
You got to make it audible there, right? In the race, you got to kind of figure out where you're going and how you're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Make some adjustments.
Yeah.
It's
make
big
it
enough to flop out. Fly. It's big enough to tuck.
Exactly. Yeah.
Did he finish last, though? I mean,
a distant last.
Right.
But in the grand scheme of things.
Was he a winner?
Maybe.
No, ooh. That's embarrassing.
Well, is it, though?
I mean, it's not embarrassing.
It would be embarrassing, yes.
Tucking up waistband, however you want to do it. Plenty of places to tuck.
No, but the short length does not give you enough places to tuck, I don't think.
If you have the waistband, and you got the track shirt over it,
yep.
Boom. Mm.
What are you wearing that's not a waistband?
So you angle it up and tuck it there, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
Hmm. You would know, Tom.
Tuck it.
Yep.
Tuck it and run.
Smitty?
There's no way... Penis popping out of your that's not
It's not attractive in any
way. It's good for the brand.
It's not good for the brand. Well. There's pictures and video of you trying to adjust your penis popping out of your shorts. Like, there's just no way that's good for you.
He's a tactical cup.
Mmm. Tup.
But it could be good for you, is what I'm saying.
Trust me, it's good for the brand.
Hate cups.
That guy's not going on being like, hey, sorry, guys. Everybody's like, yo. We saw.
Right, winner.
You're like, there you go.
Right.
I was very anti-cup when I was playing football.
I hated cups.
Super anti-cup. Yeah. A lot of players just go without it. And then the first tackle that I made, I landed right on the back of someone's heel, right on the balls. I was out for like half a quarter.
They've upgraded the cups, though, right? Like, they've had to since we were kids.
Have they?
The cups were like, they were weird. You get some, like, chafing going. It was like they would rub up against both sides.
Hate
they were uncomfortable.
Cups. And if you get hit in the cup, it still hurts very much.
You don't think there's been, like, an upgrade to cups? Technology?
I mean, it's been quite a minute since I've been out of the cup shopping game. You may be right.
I'm looking on the internet here. The design still looks roughly the same.
Kind of big on the top and then it gets skinnier on the bottom, but like
for me the discomfort was never
turning it around.
For me the cup itself was never really the problem. It was the slides. The slides were always so big and bulky and they weren't able to maintain. Like, it's poor design.
When I first started playing Little League, I'm sure they have the traditional jock strap. I never got that whatsoever. Now they have compression
shorts.
You just
put the cup on?
Now they have compression shorts where it just slides right into it.
Yeah, the cup needs a home.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
you're saying it's now in the compression shorts.
I hated the jock strap because it was assless.
Right.
It made no sense.
It had the strings on your ass.
Just give me an ass on this jock strap. Why do we have to make this assless? Is this a budgetary concern?
So you're saying compression shorts now have...
Yeah, slots for all sorts of
pads. A slot for a cup.
Yeah.
But Woody is right. The old cups, it was one size, but you would get like a different size cup. It was always like jostling around inside.
When I was playing football, you had to get waist pads and you had to tie everything with belts and an additional jock strap. Now... You just have these compression shorts that have little slots for you to put in each individual pad.
Hmm.
Way easier nowadays.
All right.
But I do miss the hip pad aesthetic of the early 90s with that little half shirt.
Tailbone right in the back. You have the one sticking out.
It's the best.
Yeah.
Who wore the half shirt the best?
Ray Lewis.
You're right. The game's over. You ended it that quickly.
Lawrence Taylor wore the half shirt?
He did occasionally.
You gotta be a linebacker.
See, Mike, you've been waiting for that question your entire life. Jesus.
College football. This was a domain. The NFL had stricter uniform rules. College football, you could get away with a lot.
Mike Rozier, pretty good. Half shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, you get the half shirt with the baggy mesh.
Pads hanging out a little bit. Yeah.
You look like a disaster by today's standards, but back then, it had a vibe to it.
It did.
Little Colorado Buffs half shirt. My God, pal.
Who was the running back from Colorado? You know who I'm talking. Oh, no.
Rashawn Salaam?
No, Westbrook.
Oh, the wide receiver.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Half shirt.
Half shirt.
Oh, yeah.
And they also had Charles Johnson. Was he a half shirt? Was Cordell a half shirt guy?
I don't remember.
He belongs in the half shirt.
Yeah, he should have been if he wasn't.
Category.
Yeah.
Why am I thinking UT had some half
shirt? For the half shirt?
Yeah.
Well, did Ricky wear a half shirt?
More on this to come.
Okay.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson wore a half shirt.
Michael Irvin did.
Penn State. Yeah. Basically, any Nittany Lion rocked a good half shirt.
I'm seeing no half shirt on Cordell Stewart. He wore a
short
jersey.
Slash. Look up Westbrook, Colorado wide receiver.
What was his first name?
I have no idea.
Michael Westbrook. Look it up.
Yeah.
Michael Westbrook.
How about Calvin Johnson? He didn't go half shirt.
No, half shirts fell out of favor. Nobody wears half shirts anymore. Miami needs to do.
You're telling me the half shirt is dead?
First of all, needs to bring back like a throwback weekend where they wear the present uniform set, but it's like a mesh jersey, and they're allowed to cut it to half.
Ooh.
That'd be great. See a bunch of belly buttons out there.
You check out Westbrook, Woody?
No half shirt on Westbrook.
What about Charles Johnson?
What?
I'm on it.
And then Rashawn Salaam. There was a Colorado Buffalo with a half shirt.
There was. Just can't remember who. Smitty, what was the funniest thing from the sports weekend?
I guess I'll stay on the penis theme. Lewis Hamilton, revelation in Vanity Fair that he does not have a penis ring after implying strongly that he did at the Miami Grand Prix. Formula One fans have been speculating for months. He finally confirmed that he was just taking the piss.
What does that mean? Taking the piss.
That he's
piss?
Just like I'm having a laugh,
he's
having
taking
a joke.
The piss.
Are you guys going to buy the Frank Ocean cock ring?
Why would I buy that?
Because its price is ranging from like $310 all the way up to $25,000. Frank Ocean is selling penis rings.
I probably won't.
What's the $25,000 look like?
Stand by.
Also,
I need to know the difference. It's a great question.
That's a penis. That's a penis that I'm looking at. Right there. Boom. The Homer Triple XL H bone ring.
Triple XL?
Yeah. $25,570. Diamond and gold ring meant to be worn.
Diamond and gold?
Yep. Meant to be worn on the penis.
But you're asking us, like,
you can also have, like, little lucky charms at the end of it.
But why would we purchase one? You're asking, like, hey, it's like a Cabbage Patch kid.
I was doing a content thing where I was just like, hey, you guys got to do this when there's just.
No.
I get the story out there.
No, I know that. Okay, good. Thanks for explaining. Are you going to get one?
I can't afford it right now. If I had the crypto crash.
Again.
Exactly.
The big crypto crash of 2022.
And Twitter has his money.
Can confirm that Charles Johnson wore a half shirt.
Well,
yes,
wow.
I knew
nice.
It.
Is that our guy?
Yeah, third time's a charm.
Mike, what was your funniest thing from the sports weekend?
So I wasn't really following the Tony Baselli Canton Hall of Fame Sugats appearance thing later into the week after I left for a holiday. So I just assumed, like all Sugats things, it would have died on the vine. You would have never actually done the thing and gone to Canton. But yeah. You actually had the follow through, and I learned this because I saw a still from the NFL Network of Tony Baselli's Hall of Fame speech, and I saw Shad Khan, I saw Tony Khan, and I saw you right next to Tony Khan, and that was how I discovered you were actually there, and it brought a big smile on my face.
Well, thank you. Too much content?
Too much blurry content.
Yeah, well.
I loved it.
Thank
I loved
you.
All the selfies of you at probably the least flattering angle possible.
Yeah,
taking
they look
upward
great, though.
You know what? I look fat. Yeah,
mean,
it was terrible.
Mean to
no, just
talk good. To you about the angles that you're settling on for your
but
selfies.
The people were all tall and behind you.
I was, Mike, right? I was at the Hall of Fame by myself. I wasn't, but you're right. Like, that's why you hold the camera up, right?
It's a byproduct yes. of you not knowing how to, maybe right. it's because your sausage fingers, you can't take the one-handed selfie.
Well,
yeah.
Because
it's
you take, like the grandparent selfie with two hands.
If you did it from an angle, it would just be your face with Tim Brown's chest.
Right.
And also so a master's hat that's been worn every day for 6 months.
Yes. Yeah. I'm not taking it
that
at
that master's hat says 2020.
It has some charm. Yeah, I mean, it does. Yeah.
Crazy. It looks
I'm
more
wear
worn
it
than
until 2023. I am.
It looks more worn than an 87 master's hat.
It's so bad.
It's just
I got to find the new hat.
Why is it so discolored?
Sweat.
I guess I didn't want the
smoke.
Answer.
But Stu, you have other hats. I would presume.
It is,
but I like this hat. This hat fits
and
fits well.
It's now the color of a cigarette filter.
It is, yeah.
Little brown.
Uh-huh.
Stu, I did enjoy your content from Canton.
Thank you. Franco Harris, you see that?
You did a good job, yeah.
Thank you.
It was great.
Parade content.
The parade content
parade
was a little grainy.
I can't get over that.
You definitely took it
with
a toaster.
It was early, Tony.
I was drinking around the world at Epcot, and I was like, man, am I really or is this just video shit? I ended up being really
I thought it was both was the answer. I thought it was my Wi-Fi.
And just
I got
ever,
right up next to the modem.
You guys
just
are
me,
you're texting someone and they send you a video and it's tiny
yeah.
on your iPhone. That's what
I hate
it looked
that.
Like.
Why,
it
is that,
one of
why do they do that?
Bad cell service.
Green
bad
text
cell
light.
Service or memory or green text. But Stu Gatz, I would presume you were sending green text to, presumably, Juju, because you had bad service.
I didn't know what I was doing, to be honest.
Understood.
I was
you did
told
a great job.
I was told to use WhatsApp, because it's got better camera. Yeah. And I tried
it's not
about
better camera, it's about better transmission of data.
Hildy was telling me to use it. I had no idea how to use it. I tried to use it. I ended up not using it. I mean,
Americans very myopic about WhatsApp. WhatsApp is the go-to communication for, I would say, 90% of countries in the world.
Yeah, really? I use it now every time I have to correspond with a UK-based Formula One person, which is turns out
all
to
they
be
use
often now.
Because we're the only country that is this iPhone saturated. And so in a world in which iPhones and Androids are meant to talk to each other, WhatsApp is the preferred medium.
And you can text over Wi-Fi. So if you're texting internationally over Wi-Fi, it's free.
Older people call it WhatsApp, though, which always gets me confused.
Oh, Hispanic people call it WhatsApp.
Yeah. Dime up a WhatsApp.
My funniest thing is a former Patriot, Rich Ornberger, admitting to causing a car accident because he did not want to be late to a practice he was trying to make the Patriots, didn't want to piss off Bill Belichick. Caused a car accident. That's how terrified he was of Bill Belichick. What's that?
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.